Who do I apply to for a pay rise, Glenn?
Your boss. So who's your boss then, Paul?
Well, that'll be you.
Mr. Retired.
that'll be you, Glenn.
Oh, gosh, you want a pay rise?
Yes. And I want to complain about the working conditions whilst I'm at it.
I expect you'll be asking for a bonus next as well.
Well, yeah. Well, pay would be a good start. And the working conditions, I mean, all day Wednesday walking in the sunshine, all day yesterday walking in the sunshine, taking photographs, drinking beer. I mean, it's terrible.
It's absolutely shocking.
Yeah.
You should definitely complain to your union representative.
Well, that was the next thing, yes. I'm going to start a union. Me and Steve Dixon.
Campaigning for better pay from the online shop.
Better pay and conditions, yes.
Well, welcome to another Hidden Wiltshire podcast, podcast 18, in a series of infinite podcasts about parts of Wiltshire that are hidden. That's the theme. My name is Glyn Coy, and I am the person behind the Hidden Wiltshire project. And with me, as usual, I have my podcast partner.
Comrade Paul Timlett.
Comrade Paul Timlett. Welcome, welcome. So we've had a busy couple of weeks, really, haven't we? I mean,
yeah.
You were complaining about the pay in terms of conditions and everything because you've been very busy on the Hidden Wiltshire front.
Well, it's kind of just been this week. I don't know what I did last week. I've got no idea. I can't remember. but this week seems to be full on Hidden Wiltshire. I'm not going to share everything I've done because that will spoiler, sort of surprise and future posts and blogs and things.
Yeah.
But I might allude to what I was up to yesterday, if that's okay.
Yeah, you can give some little teaser trailers, maybe.
Yeah, yeah. So my walking buddy Stu and I did a walk, which he actually came up with this one, and we sort of plotted it on the OS Map app, and it came in at 14 miles. So we thought 14. So we thought that's probably a little bit too long, and we cut it down, and we got it down to about just over 10 miles. And I'm not going to say where it was, but there was a stretch which was of the walk, which, to be honest, was a bit of a trudge. So I've been looking at the OS map this morning, trying to sort of figure out a way to cut that out and to shorten it a little bit. And so I came up with a Wizard Wheeze and a very interesting looking little diversion and to shorten it. So the original version was 10.14 miles. My revision came out at 10.15, so that didn't quite work. Yeah, going to look at that again. But we had a terrific day yesterday. It probably helped by the fact that we ended up in a pub.
Yeah, I saw that. You'd had a cheeky beer.
Yeah, thankfully Stu was driving, so
you had more than one then.
I had more than one. I had an opportunity to drink my way through the beer pumps on the bar. So I've got a bit of headache this morning. It doesn't take much to give me a hangover my age. But it was terrific. So I'm going to sort of jig that about. I might have to go and sort of just test the reroute. But there are two sections to it, which it would just be such a shame to lose one of those. So I'm trying to sort of string them together. But anyway, watch this space, really.
And we did... a week or two ago, we did another one of these hidden Wiltshire Museum walks as well, didn't we? In the hills above Eddington.
Yeah, and almost had a plane crash, didn't we?
Yeah, we did. for those of you who are on the walk, you'll appreciate this. But those of you who weren't, and don't know this, but in the hills above Eddington, there is an airstrip. It looks like a farm building, but it's actually an aircraft hangar. And this airstrip has got two grass runways. And as I was walking along and talking to someone, and we were both commenting how there's a lot of effort that goes into maintaining this runway, but we never see any planes land, do we? I mean, it's you know, it seems like a very extravagant use of space and time. And literally a minute later, a plane came over our heads and landed on the grass strip.
Well, I was some way behind you, as you recall, and chatting to Mrs. Hidden Wiltshire, and we could hear this sort of engine, and you were up ahead talking to somebody, and I thought, what bloody hell's that coming from? And then this plane appeared sort of over that hangar, I mean, coming into land, and I didn't realise. I said to your wife, I didn't realise where the airstrip was before. I knew there was one up there, and I'd heard you talk about Turnip Airways, and I sort of looked up and saw that windsock, which had Turnip Airways written on it, and then the plane appeared. And as it transpired, that luscious piece of grass, which I thought was the farmer practicing his golf, turned out to be the runway.
Yeah.
So he came low over our heads and put the aeroplane down in the field.
Yeah. And now we've got another walk coming up on this coming bank holiday Monday. So it will be... Yeah. The day after this podcast comes out on the Sunday, that will be Ilstoke Wood and Salisbury Plain. We've called that one.
What else should we be doing? So I think when the last podcast came out that day, we were up at East Hill Farm pulling ragwort.
Yes, we were.
So we referred to it in the last podcast, but we've now actually done it and mission accomplished. And that was a cracking day, wasn't it? Really good day.
It was. I didn't think I'd enjoy it so much, actually. But just the location of it, the camaraderie amongst the team, the opportunity just to stop and talk to cows and take photographs of the back of the hill forts that we don't normally see. It was a bit of a privilege to be up there, actually. And it was a beautiful day.
Yeah. And it was, what was it? Was it 9 or 10 of us in the end, which was, Frankie Guy, whose family run that farm up there. I mean, they were absolutely delighted, and I mean, her dad's, Richard Guy, just kept. I mean, he was just bowled over. He kept saying, "It's clear. We've cleared the whole field. This is incredible."
I know. And that's no mean feat, because at the start of the day when we arrived at this field, and he said, "Oh, we're going all the way over towards those trees in the distance." I thought, "Bloody hell!
Yeah, that's a big field.
This is a big field." But actually, I think we cleared it in about 3 hours. But if you think about it, if that's 3 hours spread amongst 10 people, that's 30 hours of effort.
Yeah.
Actually.
Yeah,
so absolutely. To do it without that support would have been a huge amount of time.
So from the
work for one person.
From the sort of Hidden Wiltshire crew, we had Alice Cambray and Ron and Celia Lomas.
Yes.
They came out, which is fantastic. It's obviously you and your sons who you dragged kicking and screaming. Over there.
I brought two of my brood along.
Yeah, and then there was Stu and Peter, who I sort of volunteer with up at Parsonage Down for Natural England. So it was a bit of a sort of mixture of a Hidden Wiltshire and Natural England gig.
Yeah.
And of course, the quid pro quo is that we're going to get Frankie on the podcast, and we'll go up and interview her at some point, which we must plan and schedule.
Definitely.
Along with the other farm that we need to go and farm that we need to go and talk to.
We've got a couple of farmers lined up now, hopefully some more in the future.
Yeah.
You know, they do a great job of, you know, looking after our landscape in here in Wiltshire, while they have responsibility for it. It's a really important role. And it's great to sort of, in some ways, this podcast has been great because it's opened up so many different doors and windows to meet these various people around Wiltshire, and it'd be good to get a few more of them onto this so we can interview them.
And of course, we're going to come on to that in a minute, aren't we?
Yes, we are. We'll be right back. So on this week's podcast, we're going to be talking about the curiously named Coffin Trail. And the Coffin Trail is an old track, really, which it follows some really old rites of way that go across the fields between West Ashton and Steeple Ashton. And the origin of it was, and the name comes from the fact that many years ago, West Ashton did not have a church. And the church of Steeple Ashton is rather large and welcoming. And back then, when there were funerals in the village, the people would wheel the coffins across this coffin trail to the church at Steeple Ashton for the funerals. So although the trail is, you know, is still there, the rights of way are still there, the name is still attached to it. So the locals, you know, call it the Coffin Path or the Coffin Trail. And you can still walk it, although Paul will have some interesting updates on the feasibility of that, given that he walked it this week. And yeah, the rights of way are across arable fields, a lot of them. So it's a bit of a challenge sometimes to find the rights of way. But I have known about this trail for a long time, actually. But it's only this year that I actually managed to pull together a sort of walk along it end to end, and devise a sort of circular route between the two villages, which was surprisingly picturesque.
How did you find out about it? Because when I was sort of Googling it, I couldn't find anything. The only thing that you type in Coffin Trail and Steeple Ashton or West Ashton, the only thing that comes up is your blog on the Hidden Wiltshire.
Yeah, it's... gosh, how did I find out about it? I'm not sure. I think it was word of mouth. And I have found some references to it outside of Hidden Wiltshire. I found some references from, I think, some website about Steeple Ashton. I'd also spoken to Andrew Zeminski about it, because he'd done some work. He's a stonemason, and he did some work on a bridge along the track. So it's one of these things that's kind of word of mouth rather than too much written down about it. But from what Andrew was saying, you know, the people in Steeple Ashton talk about the fact that it used to be paved at some point. Whether it was paved the whole way, I don't know. Probably not. Maybe in the sections coming out of the village. But it's, yeah, it's just an interesting historic link, really. And it really, it didn't need to be used that much once the church in West Ashton had been built, which I think was built in the 1800s, I think around 1846.
Is it 46 or 64? One of the two.
And actually, when I was at the church at West Ashton, I noticed that at the front, there's sort of some steps going down into what looks like a crypt. And that's for some members of the Long family. And the Long family, who lived in Rune Ashton Hall, which was just further along from West Ashton, I think they funded the building of the church in West Ashton. And the Longs are an interesting family. I mean, they're all over this part of Wiltshire, and were very, very rich landowners, and pretty much owned most of the manor houses in this area for a period of about 400, 500 years, I think.
I think, it'd probably be sort of quite... Well, we'll talk through the walk, won't we, and the sort of the route, I think. And so if you want to sort of follow along, the walk that Glyn did is, I mean, it is just called the Coffin Trail, isn't it, from West Ashton to Steeple Ashton. I haven't written it down here, but I think you posted that in something like the 20th of April, was it? It was in April.
I think it was a bit later than that. I think I actually posted it on the website in early July.
July, that was it.
I'd walked the trail twice, I think once in April in July in the evening. And it was very different between those two dates as well, because of the level of growth in the fields.
So of course you have done it twice now. I'd forgotten that. And then as we'll hear in a bit, we were over there on Wednesday. I sort of went and did the walk myself because I hadn't done it before. So it's been quite sort of interesting to sort of compare the conditions between when you first did it and then your second visit, and then when I went sort of end of August. What was making me giggle just now was what people won't hear on the podcast is that you've just had a fit of coughing just as you were about to introduce the coughing trail. So,
the coughing trail.
Yes. And of course, we had a... I don't know, shall I mention it now? The interview that we did,
yes,
which we'll come to. And Andrew, we interviewed Andrew Zeminski, the aforementioned stonemason, who also had a coughing trit. Oh God, I'm going to give up today. Had a coughing fit at Steeple Ashton Church where we met him, and we had to cut the recording then because he just couldn't stop coughing.
I know, but actually, I might. Edit that in so it's more authentic.
Yes,
keep it in the edit.
But why don't you talk us through the walk?
Yeah, so the walk starts. Well, you can start at either end, either at West Ashton or Steeple Ashton. I think both of them are okay for parking.
Well, I tell you what. Sorry to interrupt there, but
yeah,
I started at Steeple Ashton and did it in reverse, but I think a better way is to do it from West Ashton,
yeah,
because that's the way the coffins would have been taken.
Yes.
And so you're walking along the trail, and then you know the sort of views open up, and we'll explain.
Yeah.
So, if I was advising somebody, I would say start from West Ashton.
Yeah, I mean, I started from West Ashton. I parked outside the church there, which is quite interesting because I've always known about that church because I know the vicar quite well. He's the vicar mainly of St Thomas's Church in Trowbridge, but he, as most vicars these days, have more than one church under their span of control and management. He also is the vicar for West Ashton Church, so I know quite a lot of the people that are involved with that. But yeah, I parked there, and there's a sort of footpath that goes around the back of the church and heads through the grounds of the school, the village school, which is a really nice spot, actually. And then you're onto the West Ashton High Street.
Yeah, so that was the first of my challenges on Wednesday, that they've sort of diverted that path across the school field. So I started to head across from the school buildings, just straight over the field to a gate, and the gate's all been fenced off. And what I hadn't noticed was that there's a little sort of, I don't know if it's a car park, a bit of sort of hard standing right next to the school, and on the left, because there was a van parked there and I couldn't see it, on the left they've put two sort of black kind of metal fences up, and you're now supposed to walk between those two fences.
Yeah.
So, and in fact, because I didn't see it, I'd walked over to the fence, which has been closed off, and there was a scrappy piece of paper that was hanging upside down and was torn, showing the diversion of the route.
Yeah.
But I mean, if you're leaving the church at West Ashton, you've got the meadow between you and the school, but you want to be heading over to your sort of the right hand corner of that meadow. And I don't know about when you went, but because West Ashton Church was the halfway point on my walk because I started at Steeple Ashton.
Yeah.
And the church was shut.
Yeah.
It was all locked up.
And
it looks like it has been for some time because of COVID.
Yeah.
And sorry, a slight diversion, but, you know, did I message you? Maybe I didn't. I was sitting at the back of the church, sort of muttering to myself, I mean, why is it closed? And I'd love to go in there and have a look. And there's a lovely bench there, and it was really hot and sunny. So I decided to have my lunch there, got my flask out, and it promptly spilt coffee all down the... I was wearing shorts, all down the front of my shorts. And it looked like... I looked like somebody who'd sat there, an old man who peed himself.
Well, yeah.
So,
you've just done a good description of an old man... He's peed himself.
Yes, because that's almost exactly what it was. So I had to sit there, and that just made me even more bloody angry. So I sort of sat. Well, it turned out well because it meant I had to sit in the sunshine for about 20 minutes waiting for my shorts to dry out. Because if I'd have been walking down West Ashton High Street with this great wet patch on the front of my shorts, people would be looking at me at work. You know, look at that old man. Isn't it sad?
Yeah, but it's interesting though because next to the church there, you'll see that there's a road that continues on. It's a private road, which goes through the remains of the Rood Ashton estate. There's a couple of fairly major houses up there, which are what's left of what was Rood Ashton Hall. But it's funny, because if you look on the OS map, the original drive for Rood Ashton Hall didn't follow that route. It went sort of northwest to a building called Castle Lodge. And Castle Lodge is on the A350. It's like a really, it looks like a sort of castle-shaped house. It's like a gatehouse, which is like a rental property now. You can stay there if you want. I think it's on Airbnb. But then there's a road that sort of, or a path that takes you through Biss Wood. And then you can follow, there's a tree line of horse chestnuts that follow a sort of field boundary. And then the old drive used to then go through what is now a caravan park called Trowbridge Lodge Park, I think it's called. And it comes out onto the West Ashton Road in Trowbridge. And the entrance to the caravan park has got these like stone gateposts. And you can see this sort of ornate stone around it, which makes it look quite grand. But that was actually the entrance to the original drive to Rood Ashton Hall. And it's about 2 miles from there to the hall. So it was really something back in the day.
Yeah, absolutely.
There's nothing left of it now. It's all been demolished, I think. And there are some outbuildings. I think the stables is now converted into a house. There's a part of the house which still remains, which is a private home. But it was once a very, very grand mansion before the Longs eventually lost all their money and retreated into obscurity again.
Because it's now a wedding venue now, isn't it? It was by the church there. It said, you know, no access to wedding here this way or something.
Yeah, there's another road that goes into Home Farm on the other side, which links up. But yeah, I think it's a very, very sort of, there's very strong signage there indicating, don't come down this road, please.
Yeah, because a young woman sort of drove up that long drive when I was sort of trying to find a way into the church. And well, I was standing by that crypt that you mentioned. And I don't know, she must have been staff or something, but she went sort of batting up there at a hell of a speed.
Yeah.
That great long winding drive.
Yeah. So continuing the walk then, you end up, having gone past the school, you end up back onto the main road in West Ashton, and there's a short walk up there until, on the left-hand side there, you'll see a sign. It's a public footpath that takes you in between some, a sort of narrow path that takes you between the houses and brings you out onto the fields. There's like agricultural fields.
Yeah.
And I've walked this route many times over the years through those fields to do other sort of connecting walks, and that's where you start to hit the first sort of challenge, which is to find where's the bloody right of way across this field, because the map will take you in one direction and you'll notice that the farmer's not really marked it out. So when I was last there, I was walking down the tram lines in the field between the crops.
And what was the crop? What were they growing when you went?
Oh, it's hard to tell at the time because it was quite young.
Oh, it would have been just green, yeah.
Yeah, just green.
On Wednesday, because I came through that field twice. I did a slightly different route to you. And at one point I went slightly... Well, I didn't go wrong. I just ended up on a footpath I didn't intend to be on. But yeah, it was all across cultivated fields, or mostly across cultivated fields. And that first bit that you've just mentioned was... there were oats growing in there. So there's a lot of the fields around there, it's growing oats. And there was barely any sign of the path at all. So, you know, I've got this Ordnance Survey maps app. So I had the walk plotted in there. So I made sure I was absolutely bang on the path because I was just ploughing through crop. But I knew I was on the right of way.
Yeah.
I mean, you could just about make out where, you know, other people had walked through. But that was actually on the outward journey from Steeple Ashton to West Ashton. Going back, I took a slightly different route, and there was more of a defined, or more of a perceptible route through that oat field. Clearly, other people have sort of been walking along there.
Yeah, yeah, and as you're walking through that field to your left, you'll notice that your West Ashton's on a hill. It's kind of elevated up from the town of Trowbridge in the distance, which is in a bit of a dip. But I was very conscious of the fact when you look across to Trowbridge from there, it actually looks quite rural. It doesn't look like a sort of large town. It looks quite picturesque, and it flatters it somewhat.
Yeah, I'm not sure I'd go that far. It's it didn't look as bad as it truly is, but with apologies to everybody who's in Trowbridge, including you.
Yeah, exactly. I can be rude about it because I live on the edge of Trowbridge so it's fine. But you, the path will skirt around the back of Read Ashton, what's left of Read Ashton Hall. You'll see some of the walls and the buildings there, and you end up coming out onto a minor road, and that minor road sort of links West Ashton and the outskirts of Steeple Ashton, and you go directly across that and into the next field, and that's that had rapeseed in earlier in the year, and I think when I walked there in April, it was really picturesque because it was bright yellow, and the path, the right of way was clearly marked out, and it was fine. You could walk through it, no problem. When I walked through it in July, it was an absolute nightmare because the rapeseed had grown and all toppled over, and you needed a scythe to hack your way through the path there. Yeah. It was terrible.
I went a slightly different way, and it was all, everything I went through in terms of crop, apart from a bit later on, was oats, which again, I mean, it was, you know, it's I mean, some of it already had been cut, so it's about to be cut if it hasn't already been cut, and but again, so a lot of it's leaning over and has covered up any sort of patch. I mean I couldn't see any sign that the farmer had made any attempt to keep a route clear. I think he just relied on people ploughing through it. But when I was heading back from West Ashton to Steeple Ashton, where my car was, that bit as you come out of West Ashton, so the path between the houses, and you get to the field at the bottom of the hill there. So I think you went sort of more to the left there, towards Read Ashton Hill. On my way back, I went more to the right. Having crossed the oats field, I then came across another field which had been cropped, so had been mown already or harvested already, and you know, you could see the way forward there, and then you get to another. Well, in fact, it was just all one huge field, but half of it had been ploughed, and that was really, really difficult. I mean, you know, I'm sort of reasonably fit and healthy, and these were, you know, just great clods of mud, and I had pretty sort of chunky walking boots on, and it was really heavy going. If you were remotely impaired, I'm not sure you'd got across that field. You know, I was just stumbling around all over the place.
Yeah, I know when I last did that walk, I didn't bother going through that section of the field to get back to West Ashton. I just stayed on the road by East Town. Yeah. Just took the East Town road all the way into West Ashton. It's not as, you know, it's a road, so it's not as interesting, but I just felt it was probably easier than trying to hack through the crops.
Yeah, I think it was, you know, that's probably in some ways a wise decision. I mean, I didn't want to walk. I don't like walking on roads, and especially those roads around there, which are very narrow. So anything comes the other way, you've got to kind of squeeze into the hedge. So I tried wherever possible to stick to footpaths and bridleways. But the glory of that area is that there are so many footpaths, so many rights of way. You know, if one is looking impassable or difficult, you can, you know, quite easily find a diversion, and maybe that's what the farmer relies upon. You know, we'll just find another way.
Okay, but then going back to that route from West Ashton to Steeple Ashton, you carry on across the fields, and eventually you hit what looks to be some kind of a brook or a stream, with quite a nice little stone bridge that takes you into a place called Luffenham, which is very interesting.
And anybody who's looked at the Facebook site recently will have seen a little post that I did, because I spent quite a long time because that's called Luffenham Field. So from West Ashton, the bridge takes you across that little brook, as you say, and I mean, when I looked at it, I thought, why they bother putting a little bridge over. I mean, it's quite a small brook. I mean, it's only gone, I don't know. It's barely a ditch. I mean, you couldn't quite jump it, but it's not far off. But of course, if you're hauling a coffin, you need a way to get across that brook. Yeah. And the brook is, you know, if you go upstream or downstream, you've still got to cross that brook to get to Steeple Ashton. So I guess that's why they built that little bridge.
Yeah.
But it's Luffenham Field was stunning. In fact, when I got home and I was sort of writing it up, I realised I hadn't taken any photographs of the field itself. But I think my my reasoning was that it doesn't look particularly remarkable. It is just a field of grass, but they've allowed it the grass to grow sort of, you know, reasonably long. I mean, it's sort of 6 inches to a foot high, and then they've cut the Friends of Luffenham Field, who maintain it, have cut little paths around the edge, and it's a little sort of informal, unofficial wildlife reserve. It was beautiful. And there's a little picnic bench, so I sat and had a coffee there and sort of had a amble through the there's a little nature trail through the wood, you know, woodland trail with a hide for watching the wildlife. And then I think I posted a picture of a shed with a sort of scythe hanging off the back, where they obviously cut it all traditionally, you know, mow it with a scythe.
Yeah, yeah. And it's interesting. I mean, Luffenham, there are signs to Luffenham from the centre of Steeple Ashton. There's like a, at the side of one of the roads there, is a sort of proper street sign saying Luffenham this way. But it's I guess the history of it is it was a piece of land given to the villagers in, I think it was the 1800s sometime, wasn't it?
Well, I don't know, because I was trying to find something out about Luffenham Field. In fact, I don't think Luffenham is even mentioned on the map, or maybe it's on the
one.
It's
not, no.
I saw it somewhere, and maybe it was just on your blog. So I googled Luffenham Field, and there's just nothing. In fact, again, all that comes up is your blog in Wiltshire, which is sort of number one on the Google return for that. So I've got no idea what the history of is that field of that field. So I mean, if anybody listens to this and they know, then I'd love to.
Well, there is a sign there that gives some information. And I think it says the land was given to the villagers in perpetuity in 1855, and I think it's currently maintained by the Friends of Steeple Ashton, so there must be some kind of a trust thing set up for it. But anyway, it's a fascinating place, and the little bridge, there's a little stone bridge there, and I remember last year Andrew Zeminski, the stonemason, put a picture of it up on Twitter, because he'd actually been working on restoring it last year, before the lockdown. And it's quite a funny thing. Is you can see there's some investment gone into this bridge over the stream, and it just immediately makes you think, well, what's all this about then? And then you find Luffenham, and you think, oh, there's something interesting going on here. And yeah,
you're right. I'd forgotten about that site, even though I posted a picture of it on the Facebook site. But yeah, it says it's a meadow of about 2 acres. Which has been bequeathed to the village in perpetuity since 1855.
Yeah.
And of course the bridge, so what Andrew Zeminski did was to restore that bridge. So I don't know what it looked like before, but it was, I think, the little plaque on the bridge said that it was about 200 years old when they built it. I mean, I don't know what they did before about getting coffins across the brook. Just manhandle them, I suppose. So it lasted 200 years, and then Andrew restored it, and he finished the work in January 2020, didn't he, just before lockdown? As he said, it was sort of literally the last job he did, and they tied it up, made good, and that was it. We're locked down. It's worth just on a warm sunny day. It's just a delightful place to just, you know, take a little picnic, and there were benches all around the edge of the field, around the boundary, and you could just sit there and, you know, have a little picnic, and, you know, if you've got kids, it's a nice place for them to sort of play.
It's a little bit of an oasis, isn't it, in the middle of the field.
It's beautiful.
But as you move on from Luffenham and head towards Steeple Ashton, at this point you will have already seen St Mary's Church in view. It's such a big church.
Yeah.
It's like a mini cathedral, and it really stands out as you walk across those fields. And you know, at the back, in the distance, in the backdrop, you can see all the way over to Roundway Down and Oliver's Castle, and it's just a fantastic backdrop.
And that's why I think it's better to do the walk from West Ashton, because those views all gradually open up as you're walking across the, you know, following the coffin trail.
Yeah. Yeah, you can see that church coming into view from quite a distance out.
Yeah. Whereas you're going the other way, you have to keep turning around, and, you know, I kept taking photographs thinking, oh, that's a better view, and then you walk on a bit, oh, that's an even better view. Whereas if you go the other way, as we've said, it all gradually opens up.
So as you eventually get into Steeple Ashton...
Just before you get there, coming out of Luffenham Field, again, a bit of a sort of a landmark to watch out for. So you come across Luffenham Field, and then at the moment, so if you were to go and sort of walk this now, you'd find a field of beans. So you've come through Luffenham Field and you're heading towards, following the Coffin Trail, and it goes across a bean field. And again, I posted a photograph of some sort of scratched little pictures on the picnic table at Luffenham Field. And so I'm just looking at it now. Somebody sort of drawn what looks like a hedgehog with a crown and a magic wand. It's like a fairy hedgehog. Actually, not fairy, because it says King of the Butterbean, and that's that gives you a clue to what's grown in that field. And there was these little white beans scattered all over the place where the pod had burst and they were scattered everywhere. So I seem to remember going through a couple of fields of beans, and that had been kept clear. There was a sort of narrow path right through those.
Anyway, back to Steeple Ashton. So when you get to Steeple Ashton, head over towards the church and have a good look around. Now, at the moment, probably until certainly early to mid-October, the church isn't open during the week because there is some work being done on it by the stonemason, Andrew Zeminski.
Who happens to be Andrew Zeminski, yes.
Yes, yes. And we talked about Andrew in the context of the bridge, but he's now currently working on the church at Steeple Ashton. Now, his company is called Minerva Conservation, or Minerva Stonemasons and Building Conservation, I think it is. But he's an interesting guy. He's based in Frome and works throughout the Wessex region. And he wrote a book that came out just early 2020, I think, called The Stonemason. I've got a copy of it here, actually. The Stonemason, A History of Building Britain. And it's done really well. It was... I picked it up because I read a review in one of the national newspapers about it, and it had been reviewed across all the newspapers, and it's been picked up by a big publisher, so it's had a very big print run. And I know that when he was at the Chalk Valley History Festival, they have a Waterstones on site there, and they sold out of copies of his book after a couple of days. So I'd really recommend reading it, but he's a fascinating guy. Anyway, as usual, we were a bit cheeky, and I pinged him and said, any chance you want to come on our podcast? So we went over there on Wednesday and spent some time with him, and we can listen to that now. So we're actually here outside the church at Steeple Ashton, which is pretty impressive building, actually, just looking up at it. But we're actually here with a guest, a stonemason, Andrew Zeminski.
Well, we're not just outside, we're on the roof.
And you're wearing full... high vises and PPE equipment and all that.
It's all been risk assessed, so we're all good.
Full health and safety briefing.
Yeah, tick the box on the chit.
In case anybody's concerned.
But you're actually doing some work here, right?
That's right, yeah. We've got a rather full package of works here. We're repairing the hunky punks and the grotesques that some people know as gargoyles.
Yeah.
But I know you... Gargoyles are not grotesques. Gargoyles are for spreading water out. It comes from the French to gargle.
Yeah.
So we've just repaired all those, and they really are magnificent. I mean, you've had a good look and you understand what they're about, but the scale of them is so extraordinary. And the artistic achievement of them, which you can't really see from the ground, it really is something to be seen, isn't it?
We're
very lucky to be up here on the roof, I think.
Yeah, definitely. We've looked out there, really.
We'll put some photographs on the Facebook page and try and get it onto the website as well. But they really are quite extraordinary, some of these grotesques, aren't they?
Yeah.
Real sort of ugly beasts. And, and then there's a puppy with its tongue hanging out. What was your theory about... why they're shaped that way and what they're intended to do.
I think they're simply to ward away evil. They're strategically placed at the midpoint over each of the main Clearstree windows, which are the higher level windows if you're standing inside.
Right.
And in medieval times, they used to think that evil spirits could enter a property or a church or a barn or a farm building by the windows or the doors or the fireplace. So that's where you see these apostrophe marks scratched around windows. We'll see some when we have a look at the porch in a minute. It's an absolute riot of these strange symbols to ward away spirits who want to enter the building with bad intent. And that's the same with these with the hunky punks, but obviously on a mega scale. I mean, I think they are, I can sense them, you know, turning away evil as we look at them now.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's a word I'd never heard until you said it.
Apotrophaic.
Yeah, yeah.
I can
just
never.
To turn away.
I can. Yeah, it comes from the Greek to turn away.
It's Greek.
All right.
Yeah. I can never say it properly.
I'm sure somebody will correct us.
Luckily, I've got my dentures in, so it's
okay. Yeah. But you're going to be coming back to do some work on the tower shortly, aren't you? That's going to have scaffold around it.
Yeah, that's right. The one of the main ways that we pay our mortgage is taking out metal cramps that Victorians introduced to fix stone to earlier buildings.
Yeah.
And the clock that was introduced in the 1860s, 70s, I think, is absolutely full of these metal cramps. And metal cramps corrode and they jack up the adjacent stonework and fracture off, and then they fall on people's heads.
Right.
So they obviously here it hasn't yet fallen on anyone's head, but it's likely to do so. So the PCC tendered the works, and we were the lowest price. So we're coming back in a couple of weeks to take the clock, the face of the clock apart, inspect the cramps, remove whatever's there. So it's, you know, surgery, dentistry, really. Replace the corroding Victorian cramps with stainless steel and introduce some new stone. And then we're going to decorate it and then gild up all the numbers and the decorative scheme all the way around it. Yeah.
Because it's blue at the moment, isn't it, that clock face?
Yeah, it's blue with gold letters and it's got a nice sort of golden sphere going around it. So
you will have to repaint the whole face?
Or yeah. Leave it? Yeah, I'm not a gilder, but my friend and colleague Nell is a gilder. And we gild weather vanes and weather cocks, you know, all over the place. It's quite an important part of, you know, what we do. Like, being a stonemason isn't just cutting holes in old buildings. You know, you've got to have other skills if you want to earn a living, really. So we plaster walls traditionally in lime. You know, everything's lime mortar based. So, you know, you have to have a sort of package of skills that complement each other, really.
Of course, from the top of the tower, you get a really good view of the countryside here, including a really strong view of the coffin trail.
It's very apparent, isn't it?
Yeah, you can see that the actual track going through the field.
It's odd, isn't it? Because it sort of zigzags, it sort of respects old boundaries.
Yeah.
And some of the path is like double hedged. Yeah. And Rosemary, the church warden here, was saying that when she was growing up in the village, she can remember stone slabs at the at the village end of the path. But as you know, the rest of it is just it's a track through open fields.
That's right.
West Ashton was right at the edge of the parish, wasn't it? And, the graveyard here, the burial ground, is pretty ginormous.
Yeah.
So, and it's interesting looking at how high the graveyard is when compared to the lane that encloses that side and the wall.
It's a lot higher, isn't it?
Yeah. So that's, you know, literally tens of thousands of burials have slowly churned, you know, the earth, and it's just gone up and up and up. But, you know, that's such a common thing with churches, isn't it?
Yeah.
But, you know, the burial ground will be the oldest enclosed space in any parish, really.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's much older than the church. So there probably was a Saxon church here.
Yeah. You wrote a book a year or so ago, didn't you? The Stonemason.
Yeah.
Which I've read, and I really enjoyed it.
Someone read it?
Yeah. Really?
Thanks very much, yeah.
But I noticed one thing you mentioned in there is, when you talk about dust, is you try to work a sarsen stone like the builders at Stonehenge did, and I think I've read somewhere you said that the silica dust from that would have killed them within a year or two of them fashioning the stones.
Yeah, I mean, I'm lucky, really, that this the dust that this produces is just limestone dust. There's no silica in it at all.
Yeah.
So it's actually, even though I'm standing here having a good old-fashioned cough, you know, I've got wonderful fingernails because the lime's calcium and it's just good for you.
Yeah.
And we never get colds. We never get the flu.
Yeah.
It has quite high astringent qualities.
Yeah, yeah.
And we're working outdoors all the time. Yeah,
yeah.
The sarsen I got to recreate the Stanley stone, just as a purely experimental sort of piece. Yeah, as soon as I started pounding away with these spherical balls called mauls, in the same fashion as the early Bronze Age folk did when they were creating the monument, it's just the amount of dust that was being created was astonishing. And if you're breathing this in, your lungs are going to start bleeding very, very quickly.
Even if you're doing it outside.
Literally within months. Yeah. And I think if there are whole family communities, you know, like the stones at Stonehenge weren't just pulled out of the ground and put up. They were dressed, they were given corners, they were given flat faces. You know, it's a terrifically huge undertaking. And the people who were involved would have been dead very, very quickly, There's no face masks then.
I think you said sarsen stone is pretty hard. It's tough.
This limestone here is like a cake.
And sarsen
is. I knew this old boy sarsen cutter, and he referred to it as the hardest stone known to man.
Yeah.
And he's bloody right as well. Yeah. It's such unforgiving stuff.
Yeah.
It was interesting, really, your comment about the fact that. You know, the people who carved the stones, you know, who made Stonehenge would have been, you know, master craftsmen of their time. And where did they all go to afterwards? Oh. They finished that. And as you said, they all died.
That's the great question. Why are there no more stone? You know, it was a terrific capital undertaking to create this monument in stages. But, you know, to actually getting it to site, because everything came from Westwoods, they've recently discovered just outside,
near Marlborough.
South of the A4 near Marlborough. So I think they transported the sarsens by the easiest route, and that would have been by water.
Right.
And fortuitously, the River Avon flows from north to south pretty directly from the area of the Marlborough Downs to Salisbury Plain.
Yeah.
So there's no way they would not have used, you know, this image of savages in furs, you know, with ropes dragging these 30-ton stones on rollers. Yeah. It's just not going to happen because the River Avon would have been a lot broader. It would have been a lot deeper. That water table was a lot higher at that time.
Yeah,
they absolutely would have palleted, put it on a pallet, and floated it down down the river. You know, the Egyptians did that. Oh no, the Nile's a different different thing to the River Avon as you see it today. I mean, it's impossible to believe, but the River Avon at Pusey, where they would have put it in, which is only a mile or so, most of it's downhill from westwards.
Anyway, so thanks for the tour of the roof.
Well, we'll see you in a couple of weeks' time.
Yeah.
The scaffolding goes up, I hope.
Yeah,
because it'll be a really interesting project.
Definitely.
Because we're not actually right at the top, are we? We're just sort of halfway up.
We're halfway up.
The key was missing for the...
Yeah, we couldn't get up the tower today, but we'll be back.
We're going to come back and do it.
So, thanks.
Great. Thanks for coming over.
Cheers.
Thanks, Andrew.
I mean, what a super bloke. I could have spent all day talking to him.
He's a fascinating guy, isn't he?
And I think I said on my Facebook post, you know, within minutes of meeting him, you feel like you've known him for years.
Yeah.
He's such a sort of affable guy. He's very, very knowledgeable, very entertaining. Just a super all-round bloke. I think he said we had about 15 minutes, and we ended up with him for an hour and a half. And of course, what was absolutely perfect was that just after we started speaking to him, the church bells started to chime.
They did.
11 o'clock.
Yeah, that's true. As you'll have just heard, but we had a lot of we were there for a long time, and we looked at, you know, we even went to the front of the church and we're looking at the impact of the Civil War on the building, the English Civil War, because there are musket holes and, you know, craters in the wall which indicate that, you know, someone was being shot at by the door. It's just fascinating.
And I think that's what was so sort of entertaining really about talking to him and interesting, because he pointed all that out and he kind of brought it alive. For me, it was like being transported back to the Civil War. And he said, look, if you look here with the marks of the musket shot and the canister shot, he called it, or cartridge shot, which would come out of cannons and sort of sprayed. It was a bit like a 12-bore shotgun cartridge, but on steroids. And he said, and you can see that here around this corner, there would have been a guy, hiding behind this corner and popping his head out and taking pot shots. And as Andrew sort of described, he obviously put up a bloody good defence, because there was, the building, the wall of the church was sort of peppered with musket shot. And, I guess that, the poor guy was, they got him in the end, but it was a spirited defence, because there's, above his head and all behind him. I mean, whether it was one guy or a couple, but you can almost picture this sort of battle, these one or two guys sort of secreted behind this wall, trying to sort of fighting for their lives, really.
Yeah. It's fascinating. I could have spent all day with him.
Yeah, yeah. And there was after we recorded, he was showing us some of the graffiti inside the porch, and the oldest bit, which you took a photograph of, was a guy called Anthony with an I on the end, Pashant, which was a really interesting name, and it was 1572, something like that.
Yeah, 1570 something.
Yeah, yeah.
It's fascinating. I did a quick Google search for that name, and nothing came up. So I need to get someone to do some research on that.
Yeah, it's a really interesting name. And again, obviously, whilst we were up on the roof with him and sort of looking at all those etchings and the glass. And again, the other thing that I should have known this, but we were looking at the stained glass windows in the church, and pointing out the difference. So there's one huge window which is really garish, sort of saturated colours, and then all of the rest of them are either just plain glass or very sort of faded colours. And as Andrew pointed out, the one with sort of really garish colours was Victorian, as a Victorian replacement, and he pointed out that some panes of really quite pale yellow. And he says, and of course, paint technology and the technology for making stained glass was different, the colours were nowhere near as rich. So these sort of faded yellow, apart from being faded by sunlight, he said, when they were first made, they would have been quite faint. The colours were not faint, but the colours would be nowhere near as saturated as they are now. And that's what he does. He just brings these buildings alive when you listen to him speak. And of course, he's doing a talk at Topping's Bookshop, isn't he, in Bath?
Yes, he is. Yeah, I think it's on the 5th.
Yeah, something like that.
5th of September. Yeah. I think he's also on the same day, he's doing a guided walk of Bath, but I think that's sold out. But I think there are some tickets left for the talk in the evening. Mm-hmm. I bought a ticket, so I'll be there.
Yeah, I was wondering about it. But so I need to get onto that before they all sell out.
But whilst we're at Steeple Ashton Church, before we start the journey back, there's a great book that I've discovered. And I discovered this because the lady who wrote it, Cheryl Nicol, has... I think she's in the Hidden Wiltshire group, and she's also left comments on the website. But she's from New Zealand, but is a descendant of the Longs. And she wrote this book called Inheriting the Earth, The Long Family's 500-Year Reign in Wiltshire. And there's a section of it that talks about Steeple Ashton. So I'll just read it out. This is talking about Richard Godolphin Long of Rood Ashton. So in 1799... Richard purchased the 38-roomed Steeple Ashton Manor House with the surrounding farm, which remained in the family until the 1970s. Dated in 1647, the house has a tall, flat, symmetrical gable front, and beside it stands a 17th-century granary and round pillars. Steeple Ashton Church adjoins the gardens, towering over the village in all its glory with its pinnacles, buttresses, battlements and gargoyles. Inside the church is a special front pew with the long coat of arms on the side. More than two centuries later, Margaret, the future Viscountess Long, wrote that no vicar dared ever go over his time limit when her father-in-law, the third Viscount, was there. He had perfected a repertoire of deep breathing and ostentatious sighing and wheezing, so that all concentration on God, both for the vicar and the congregation, was impossible beyond a certain point. The purchase of the manor house must have put Richard in a celebratory mood, Shortly afterwards, he regaled the neighbourhood with a fine ox roasted whole on a huge bonfire accompanied by bread and cheese and two hogsheads of strong beer. So there you go, a little bit of the longs in Steeple Ashton. So thanks to Cheryl for this great book, actually. I recommend it.
Of course, it sounds beautifully written. I mean, it was that, again, it sort of brings it to life, doesn't it?
Yeah. But,
of course, we saw that pew, didn't we, in the church with the little thing about the Viscount on the end of the pew.
Yeah, so anyway, leaving Steeple Ashton, which is a very picturesque village, actually. Unfortunately, the pub's closed at the moment, but they're doing some work on it.
Oh, is that, I did wonder that. I was going to ask if you knew, because I walked past it on the return journey and it did look like the curtains were drawn. I thought, God, I hope this isn't another pub that's gone sour.
When you start to come back, the route I took was not following the same route I came out of West Ashton on. It's kind of follows it to start with and then kind of veers left over towards a trackway called East Town Lane. And it brings you out through East Town, and as you walk through there on the left hand side, you can glance across and see very good views of the escarpment of Salisbury Plain, and you can see Eddington and Bratton Camp, Pickett Hill. Very good vantage point to see those views. So it's very nice at sunset when the shadows start to come out of the hollows that come down to ground level from the top, and then you'll know you're heading towards the right area because you'll see some kind of one of those old, I don't know what they call them. You often see them in American farms on prairies, the windmill things.
Yeah, I took a picture of that. So, that's interesting. So obviously we did sort of our routes converged at one point. Yeah, I took a picture of that windmill because in the background you could see the church, you could see Steeple Ashton Church. So I tried to get them both in the shot.
Yeah. Yeah, I once took a sunset shot up there with my phone that was really nice, but of course, because it was on my phone and the light was fading, it wasn't a very... It didn't have much data on the photo, let's just say. But it was a nice thing to look at as the sunset. But yeah, as you go through past that windmill, you're in East Town, which is a tiny little hamlet along that minor road that runs from Steeple Ashton to West Ashton. And as you said, you know, there are some rights of way back to West Ashton through the fields, but they're pretty ropey. And as I said earlier, I stuck on the road for that section.
Yeah, well, the field that I mentioned with the great clods of earth, as you go down that road from East Town Hamlet back towards the West Ashton Road, it's the footpath is just on your right, and it cuts sort of diagonally across towards, basically heading towards West Ashton Church in the distance. At the moment it's just not even, it's barely worth trying.
Yeah. But that pretty much completes the route once you're back at West Ashton. So it's a nice little route, a lot of history along it. It's one you can do all year round, but actually it's probably slightly better when the crops are shorter, so in the spring.
Yeah.
And obviously there's a lot to see, you know, in Steeple Ashton with the church, and spending a bit of time there is definitely worth some time.
The walk itself is what, four and a half miles, something like that in total. So it's not a long walk, so it does give you plenty of time to explore in Steeple Ashton in particular. But I really enjoyed it despite all the challenges that I faced with route finding and blocked footpaths and blocked rights of way and missing signs and all the rest of it.
Yep.
But I still really enjoyed it.
Yeah, okay. But I think we can wrap up there. We haven't really decided what we're going to be doing in 2 weeks' time, but we will do by the time we get there. So we'll be back in 2 weeks as usual. We've already talked about the fact that we've got a walk coming up on Bank Holiday Monday, but there are a couple more in the calendar. There is one on the 12th of September, which will be Devil's Den in the Fifield Down area, so be looking at the Sarsen Stones over there.
And in the running order I sent you, I'd written Nightjars in brackets, because I saw somebody posted a little, I mean, it was just dark, but it was the recording of Nightjars up on Fifield Down, which is, I mean, they're so rare these days. That's fantastic to know that they're up there.
There is another walk I've got planned. This is just a Hidden Wiltshire one. It's not done through the museum, but so I'm doing a guided walk of Bradford-on-Avon on the 4th of September. We're going to sort of explore all the sort of hidden nooks and crannies. I'm going to keep the numbers quite low for that because it's sort of walking around a town. It's probably better to have a low number on that. So I've got it ticketed and all set up, but we'll put links to that in the show notes. And then the usual wrap-ups, Paul.
Yeah, just obviously thanks to Steve Dixon as usual. So this week's piece in the middle is it's called Play Dead. See what I did there? Coffin yeah. Trail. Play, no, never yeah. mind. The other thanks again and perfect link with Steeple Ashton. Thanks to Tim Kington at TK Sales for these discount to for lower boots. TKC Sales, where Tim is based. He's actually in Steeple Ashton. It's in the old Spitfire hangar.
Yep.
So that's where he's based. And I've got to say, Tim has the patience of a saint because we've been trying to get a pair of boots to fit my wife, and we've been over to see him a couple of times, and he's just got endless patience, and you know I can't thank him enough for what he's done. So the offer code still live. Tim's very happy to keep it going. HW20 Hidden Wiltshire 20 when you go onto the checkout page on the lower Boots or Lower UK website. Google it, you'll find it. But can't recommend their boots highly enough, or the service. As you said, show notes with all sorts of links, and of course the online shop.
Yes. Okay, so yeah, we'll be back in 2 weeks, and thanks for listening. So, bye everyone.
Ta-da.